since when is the minimum standard good enough for anything? When did the building industry allow this to happen? Why do people not insist on better?
That's Burkhart Hansen of Carbon Light, and this is Home Style Green. G'day, welcome back to another episode of Home Style Green. This is the podcast dedicated to inspiring people to make a better place to live. My name is Matthew Cutler-Welsh. I'm the host of the show, and this week I'm really excited to bring to you this chat that I had with Burkhart from Carbon Light. Carbon Light is a manufacturer of high-performance and passive house homes using prefabrication. They're based just out of Melbourne in Victoria, Australia. And Burkhart just dropped some great knowledge during this chat. He's got some great one-liners and some really good analogies of the building industry with just general quality and the way we do things and why the standard way of doing things is you should just not put up with it. So let's get stuck into it. This is my chat with Burkhart. I started out by asking him a bit about what exactly is Carbon Light and how we got started in the first place.
When I first arrived in Australia, I came from, obviously German background and done a lot of work in Europe, and always since I left school really specialised in prefabrication and passive house. And with that, you get to know building physics. And I guess it was a bit like Alice in Wonderland, getting down the rabbit hole, and I was hooked immediately. Like I remember that, even how I got so addicted to this stuff, because it just makes such a difference. And to be able to analyze building performance and I guess change people's lives with simple, correct, fault-free carpentry was somehow just amazing. And when I arrived in Australia, I travelled first, and then now I've got to know my wife and whatnot, so it's a longer story there. But when I arrived first and I started working, it was, I don't know how to say this politely.
But you don't have to be polite.
It was
say it
shocking.
Like it is.
It was being transferred into a time. That's how I imagined the Wild West, so how houses are built, It's like, and it was a weird combination how, you see people standing up wall by wall, physics completely ignored, and people just somehow pretended that it doesn't get cold here. We don't have building physics, don't apply over here. And this attitude, this reluctance to change was incredible, because dad's done it like this, grandpa's done it like this, we've done it like this.
Yeah.
This is how we do things around here. This is literally what my first response was when I went, how do you get rid of any condensation, on the membrane? And they go, this is how we do things around here. You got to spend some time and learn. So even through Certificate 4, Builder's License, people were going, this is how we do things around here. So just try to, fit in and play by the rules. And this is not in my DNA. It never was.
Because you trained in Germany, right? As a carpenter.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Born and raised in Germany, and I did my apprenticeship over there. And when I was 18, I started traveling. So I traveled through Europe, and I worked in Scandinavia quite a bit, in Spain and Austria. And I went on this traditional carpenter's journey for 3 years. And that really enabled me to just expand, particularly my knowledge, particularly in southern Germany.
That's the journeyman process to become a master carpenter.
Yes, yeah, I was on my way on my journey, I guess, about 4 years, close to 4 years, and. Yeah, it was brilliant. It was the best time, because you got nothing to do apart from mastering not just your trade, just your life. Just get independent and wake up, you know, like it's just you take responsibility for your own action. And really, it sounds awfully cheesy, but it really shaped me to the I guess director in the business and how I operate my business.
Because it's an important distinction, I think, to make. Because when you say apprenticeship, a lot of Australians or New Zealanders think, you know, a couple of years hanging around with a builder on site and then you get your ticket and you're good to go. But that master carpenter qualification is something quite different, isn't it, from Europe?
Yes, yeah. See, in this, as a master carpenter, you have to be a master to run a business, to be allowed to establish a business. So that, and as part of that is also that you have to be a master to be able to train young apprentices, because it's such a big deal and very serious matter to take on an apprentice in Germany, which you're taking on a young life. Again, I know how this sounds. It sounds awfully cheesy here potentially, but you take on a young life and you shape this person and you push that in the right direction, which is a setup for their career, for their passion, for their life, right? And when I started over here, young apprentices are used, not all, obviously, you know, not all builders do that, but a lot of those times as cheap labourer.
Mm.
So, and they get dumped the minute that things get tight or difficult or there's no more work. How do you think you get any form of work ethic and dedication out of these young people? It just doesn't work. It is it's a crazy nonsense approach. And
that German way must also instill a lot of value in the end product and what you're actually doing is because it makes it bigger than just putting up sticks of timber. It's about, you say that, I don't think it sounds cheesy at all. You're looking after that life of the person that you're training, but beyond that, you're looking after the people that you're building a house for.
Yeah, I guess it gets you back to the very first question that I never really responded to or answered to, is why do you do what you do?
Uh-huh.
That was, for me, was the first question. If you, in my opinion, anyone who cannot answer the question in business has got a fundamental problem. So we wanted to build houses that are fit for purpose, not just a shelter. Like, and this again, I always have been stepping on many toes where people going like, oh, you know, my house is quality. And when I would talk about quality, I'm not saying a marble bench top here, but just fault-free building envelope that is well ventilated. That should be the basics. And we wanted to set out, and we established Carbon Light to be that leader, to be the one that swims against the stream. And my business mentor always said to me, you know, leaders don't ask for permission. They don't wait for anyone to agree with you. And if you divide opinions on this, that's not a bad thing. This is not a horrible thing, because not everyone is going to like what you do, but some people that want to listen, that will get it and they will support this, because ours is, I wanted to lead the way through Carbon Light, through facts and you know, based on physics, so we can show that the houses will perform. We can prove how airtight they are. We can show that they have got no thermal bridges. We can calculate to the cent precisely how much energy they're going to use.
Yep.
And then on the other side, you've got 6-star rated, which has got zero reinforcement. It's an outdated, fraudulent system where you can offset single glazing, aluminium frame single glazing windows with a water tank. I mean, where's the logic in this, you know? And during the build, it's the setup that we always had. So it's there's base stage, and then there's frame stage, and then there is final. So between the frames up and final inspection, zero reinforcement on air tightness, on is there any insulation in it at all? And it was just not good enough. And people then on a more serious note, people start getting sick in their homes.
Yeah.
And you know, you're creating mold, black mold in homes, which you take that matter to Europe and you go, anyone going, like, yes, a little bit of mold in the house. You know, there's a very good chance that you go to jail as a builder for this, you know, and you should, because you have not done your job incorrectly. It's like driving a car without a seatbelt or without an airbag. You know, you would bring this right back to the manufacturer going, not good enough. And that's exactly why we created Carbon Light, because we went like, no, this can't happen, this won't happen, and this is our why. So it's just, we wanted to create...
There's just such a huge gap there between what is common standard practice, and this is the case in New Zealand as well as Australia, and what you're describing as, you say, a fit-for-purpose house. And I want to come back to the six-star thing and you know, substituting, you know, collecting points. What do you think that having things like that out in the marketplace, what does that do for the consumers?
To have the six-star rating in the market, you mean?
Does it make your job harder to sell what you're trying to do because they've kind of got this other energy rating thing out there?
It certainly does, because the if everything comes down to money, right? It's budget is always the biggest factor, and there's always one of the initial questions, how much does it cost? So if you say, look, I'll get you something high performance, or even you go all the way to passive house, then they're going, well, how much extra is it? Okay, well, yeah. You can't compare a Mercedes-Benz with a pair of rollerblades, right? That makes zero sense. So you need to create some sort of baseline.
Yeah.
Now, if your baseline is the minimum standard, I mean, by definition, that is the lowest standard you can possibly apply before you're actually liable for damages or you go to jail or whatever the punishment is for this.
Yeah.
But since when is the minimum standard good enough for anything? Since when is that?
Mm.
When did the building industry, when did allow this to happen? Why do people not insist on better? So if you buy a booster seat or baby seat for your car, you know, you can go like, look, this model here is, you got that for $50, but you know, we've got the 5-star safety rating or whatever that may be, for this baby seat, it might be $100, but.
And that's quite a good analogy, because it's something that we're putting our family into and expecting it to look after them, which is the same as a babysitter. And so,
I said this before that at the conference, and I did not make myself many friends on this, but I said if you would we need to be. The language needs to change on this. So rather than saying, oh, 6-star could be good enough, for, it's not good enough. It's not fit for purpose. So if you don't build high performance, or you at least, and let's take passive house and high performance out of this. Let's say you build correctly, fault-free, right?
Yep.
The bare minimum, what it should be, which should have an air tightness layer. It should be having a diffusion open layer on the outside, and it should have decent glazing, and it should have ventilation. That is the bare minimum. If you do not, you may put you and your family at risk. That is a fact, and that can be proven, that can be calculated, that can be analyzed. That is it.
Yeah.
So to go and compare this back to the car, you're going, well, I've got builders in when I'm teaching the tradesperson course. I've got builders saying, yeah, but look, the condensation issue only then occurs when it's cold outside. I was like, would you drive a car when anyone says to you, look, the brakes work well, but only in dry condition? But mate, this is Australia. It rarely rains around here, so don't worry about it.
Yeah, yeah.
So it just doesn't make any sense. And having the 6-star rating and not adjusting this is a real challenge. So going back to price, you need to create the baseline. If you want to create and compare high performance with a conventional build, I guess, or then you would have to somehow find that baseline in that what we know is the star rating, right?
Yep.
So that means the star rating would have to be at least the house, the same house, like for like, 7, 8, 9, 10 stars
yeah.
to be anywhere near that comparison. And all of a sudden, you'll find passive house or high performance is not more expensive. It
yeah,
is not.
Yeah. I think that's a good way of putting it. I heard someone say recently, I think it was a conversation on LinkedIn where someone was making the point that people shoot for 6 because they assume, you know, five stars sounds good. 6 must be really good. And then you say, well, no, it's actually 6 out of 10. And that's not a good score.
It's terrible. Yeah.
Coming back to your thing, since when is 60% of what something could be a good thing?
Yeah.
It's just not.
You're going like, well, these apples, they have been sprayed a bit, but it's still an apple, I guess, you know.
Yeah.
And you're going, yeah, that's fine. No problems.
Or 60% of the apples in this bag are edible.
Yeah, you go like, well, still good odds. It's a strange conversation to have sometimes, but
now you mentioned
it's one that we really got to be honest and open about it.
Absolutely. You mentioned a couple of times their fault-free building, which implies that there are some common faults that is typical in a normal building. So can you run through what those are? What are the faults that normal building generally includes?
Yeah, sure. How much time have we got? There's so many things wrong with it. I struggled to start.
Well, maybe flip it around. I mean, you've mentioned a few times some of the things that you do. So, because you obviously build fault free. So, what are the things that you incorporate to make it fault free?
Yeah. So I think the big one, the most obvious one in your current construction is the external sarking. So you buy sarking for $1.50 supply and install. That is beyond ridiculous. I mean, you can't assume that this is going to be a great product, you know. So
this is because sarking, we've got different names for different things in different parts. So this is an outside membrane, a wrap.
Correct, yes.
And why are people putting that on? What's its purpose?
It's I don't even like saying it, but it's supposed to be weather tightness.
Right.
And so you using a membrane that is not diffusion open, it doesn't allow any moisture to get through from the inside to the outside.
But people think that's a good thing, right? People think that's a good thing because they're like, well, I want to keep the water out, so it's got to be watertight. Yeah.
So, but then the water stays out. The rain stays out, that's fine. But then people realize, oh, this thing is actually, we're now trapping moisture inside the wall, right? Mm-hmm. That goes from the outside, from the inside into the wall. And then we're piercing holes into these silver sarkings, which allows airflow, but it allows also external water to get back in. I mean, whichever way you take this, it is fundamentally wrong.
So it kind of defeats the purpose of putting it there in the first place.
Yeah, and then you have got an aluminium sarking on the outside, right? An aluminium layer could not
you have in
create
Australia.
A better surface for condensation to be created inside your wall. So then there is, on top of that, I've seen this just two houses down the road from my house. So aluminium sarking on the outside. And then you put metal battens on top of it these metal battens hold a metal cladding. So this is the perfect transition for heat to get into your wall.
It's a really good conductor right there.
Yeah, it's fundamentally wrong. You couldn't get this any more wrong if you try. So the problem, I guess, what I've get is a lot of feedback. What I get directly from builders in the course is that people are saying, "Look, if condensation is so bad, how come I haven't had a problem yet? Because I don't have any condensation somewhere." And I say, "Well, I can guarantee you got mold somewhere, but you just haven't heard about it because people are kind of okay with the fact that in winter you have a moldy bathroom."
Mm-hmm.
You know, due to cold surfaces and a lack of ventilation.
Is it also the case that some of that mold will be inside the wall where it can't be seen because it's
majority? Yeah, the majority will be in the wall, and by the time you can see it coming through, you've been breathing this stuff in for a few years. You know, so it's see the problem. I think we need to take one step back in Australia. People don't realize what is wrong with the build-up. We haven't really made the mistake yet that Europe has done and Canada has done or other countries have done or gone through. When the demand is there to build more energy efficient, people start sealing up these silver sarkings on the outside and putting insulation in the walls. We're shifting the dew point in the wall and then we'll seal this thing completely airtight from the outside. That's like wearing a if you go outside on a windy, cold, rainy day and you're going out in a shirt, that doesn't make any sense. You're cold, right? So that's like living in an uninsulated house. So you go back inside, you get yourself a jumper. That's the insulation you put in the walls. Now, for a short period, this will be better. You're not as cold anymore, but you're exposed to the elements, you're exposed to the rain. Therefore, when your jumper gets wet, it's not effective anymore and probably makes it worse. So to put this back in building terms, that aluminium sarking is like a plastic layer that you put over your jumper. Mm-hmm. So it protects your jumper from the rain, and that seems all fine, problem solved for a minute. But you keep walking down that street and you start generating heat because you're getting warm. That's the inside of your house when you're in there cooking, showering, moisture's generated. So now all of a sudden you will find that moisture wants to get out but can't get out because of that plastic layer. Gets trapped in your jumper, which is the insulation in your walls, and it sits there and gets you really uncomfortable and it gets you really unwell because it sits there forever.
Yeah.
We see big volume builders now putting – sorry, I've got to laugh about this – but you see some ducting, duct tape being used on the joints of the aluminium sarking. Brilliant. Yeah. You know, it lasts a week before it peels off. But it's a step forward where they're saying, well, there is a demand there. There is definitely a drive by customers to build more energy efficient.
Yeah.
So here's my biggest concern. We now, this demand will drive the mass market towards sealing these silver sarkings up with duct tape because we know, right, very basic, if you put your plastic jacket on, you're going to be warmer. It's better than before. That is what actually caused these huge amounts of building damage in Europe. That was the main mistake we've done.
Yeah.
This is what we're trying to avoid here, that we're going down the same path.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
If you get rid of, put your jumper on, no problems. That's a good step. But then put a Gore-Tex jacket over it.
Mm-hmm.
A hiking jacket or whatever you want to call it. A jacket that's wind resistant, watertight, but diffusion open. You know, allows you to breathe, and you're just making the insulation work.
Yeah.
So a lot of the builders that I speak to, they don't see the problem of condensation being trapped because their houses are built so poorly that there's so much airflow in the wall that there is no chance for any water to stay, for any condensation to occur because it is just simply way too open. So you start sealing this up and you don't seal this up properly and in a diffusion open manner, and then it stop vapor to get into your jumper, into your insulation in the first place, and you create a disaster. And other countries have done this before, and we're heading exactly that way.
That's one of the real frustrations, is that this isn't a new issue. It's been experienced across Europe. You mentioned North America, I know. Yeah, we've had the big leaky building issues here. Now, as Thomas van Remsdonk
from the climate
talks about, he talks about leaky buildings 2.0, which is where we're getting the condensation accumulate. Yeah, we've dealt with the water coming in from the outside, but if we're sealing up by accident, now we're getting the moisture accumulating from the inside. So we're going to face the same sorts of symptoms of decay, mold, all that stuff, but it's just the moisture is coming from a different place. And we know this stuff, we've talked about. I get the frustration is just seeing this kind of this slow motion train wreck happening out on in suburbia every day of the week with all these houses being built. I'll just pick up on that. You're talking a lot about aluminium foil now. foil's a big issue in Australia. We've stopped using it here in New Zealand, but we have other similar membranes that aren't as diffusion open, but we're not quite as bad as foil. But yeah, foil just baffles me. I don't think it really has a place at all in a building envelope.
And it's difficult to figure out why that is. It's just this reluctance to new stuff because the cost difference is on a project is insignificant. It's nothing. You write a spreadsheet and you substitute $1.50 membrane for a $4 membrane. Yeah, square meter by square meter, that seems a lot, but over the entire house, this is not something that makes or breaks a project.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I don't know, you know, to your earlier point, what's different into what we do. Well, we're just simply addressing those points by applying the correct membranes. That is really, in a nutshell, it is it.
Yeah.
To making the insulation work, just using the correct membranes, and then attention to detail. So whether you build a passive house or high performance home, it's the principles are very, very similar. It's attention to detail and pride in your job, really. Just do the right thing. That's what it comes down to.
Now, we haven't got around to much about carbon light, but just to finish off with, tell us a little bit about your company, Carbon Light, but also your panels and why that's a good option for people looking at a fit for purpose house.
Sorry, I always get sidetracked once you get started on addressing the issue.
Good. Passion is good.
But why does carbon light exist, or what do we do? It's a solution to a problem. So but we just got to be able to fix something or address something, we got to be able to identify what this is, what the problem is. And I think that's step one. And that's what we've just talked about, is what is the problem here and what we're trying to do. So carbon light is a simple response to address all of these items. So I wanted to create something that is, there's a lot of greenwash, unfortunately, out there as well. A lot of some product is called an eco, and you look behind the scenes and it is not, I've seen some builder advertising, you get a 7-year structural warranty. That's the legal minimum, So it's nothing to be advertising with. That's your legal obligation. So if we wanted to tick some boxes that what everyone wants, I want people to be in control of their life, of their health, of their energy bills. Take control of where you live and how you live. Now, what do you want this to look like? That's up to you. That's your house. I just respond to that. But the basics, you mustn't change, because I'm going to get this, the technical side of it, I'm going to get this well-insulated, thermal bridge-free. I'm going to get this airtight to passive house standard, and I'm going to get this well-ventilated. So that means there is a lot of items in there. As soon as people start researching, it's quite overwhelming the options that you've got. Mm. So, again, my mentor is brilliant. He always said to me, give them the cake. Don't give them a list of recipe. Give them the cake. So that was my... that was my guidance there. I wanted something that is locally sourced materials. So first up, sorry, one step back. Use the highest energy efficiency standard on the planet, right? That for me is, people argue back and forth, but let's call this passive house performance. It doesn't need to be certified, but it is a very strict controlled performance standard. Mm-hmm. So that's great. That gives you reassurance and I can analyze it. Done. You take this to the Australian climate, and it turns out we can do this with a 140 mm stud frame to achieve the highest energy efficiency standard. Why would you not? It mustn't make any sense not to do it.
I suspect there might even be some places where you can go down to a 90 mm frame, wouldn't there?
Up in Sydney, Brisbane.
Yeah.
We're delivering, just got the news yesterday, a larger project we're delivering up to Sydney. and we're just doing the building shell for the builder there, 90 mil stub frame. It's zero difference to what you've been doing so far.
Because like you said, it's not the woolly jumper. It's more about the jacket, right?
That's right. That's right. So we wanted to then, we're addressing the highest energy efficiency standard, right? If you do it, you might as well do it correctly. Then I wanted to locally source materials. I don't want to import everything that I only import what I absolutely have to. So locally source materials. Then I wanted no VOCs in the house. Again, I still got a lot of the times where I get the hippie stamp, but if I ask for this, you know, people going like, well, you know, just not really. I don't want toxic fumes in the house. This is not too much to ask for. That's what we're going to do.
Yeah.
Then I wanted to be carbon neutral, right? It sounds like this big thing at the moment, but it's not really not that hard. CarbonLite has been carbon neutral for a couple of years now, and we're just currently getting our construction system analyzed to be carbon neutral so that the product is carbon neutral before it arrives on site.
Wow.
Then you can analyze also the life cycle on the consumption of it.
Yeah.
It's not that difficult. So for people then to have reassurance that this is all ticking all the boxes, we had went through the lengthy and extraordinarily expensive procedure of getting our system Passive House certified.
Yeah.
Every detail point is analyzed for the thermal bridging coefficient and whatnot. It, like I said, a very lengthy exercise, but we went ahead and we got it done. So,
which is pretty huge, right? Because then a designer can just basically select your system in PHPP in the Passive House planning package, and it just drops it in, right?
And it dramatically drops the input that's required for the certification process. So rather than $8,000, this thing now costs $4,000.
Yeah.
Now, this is going to be a lot easier for me to argue that point and go, look, this.
Plus, it's a huge endorsement. It's a huge endorsement for the quality and quality control of your whole system.
Yeah. And not long from here, it will be adding to your resale value if you wish. And, you know, the next big stage that we can actually implement and make this a standard for us is the blower door test.
Right.
So we can test the air tightness of the building before any plasterboard goes up. Like we've got our own tester, so we can test this multiple times and just give reassurance this will perform as it's designed. This is the key difference to conventional building. It's built as designed, so and we can prove it, and people get this reassurance throughout the build, saying, "Yep, okay." And I, Davis, you know, I think the Australian standard just adapted 10. No, I can't remember in air exchanges.
10 air changes as a option for one of the methods of verification, but I think it's limited.
That's at this stage. Left the door out, you know. So it's,
yeah, because what are you aiming for? You'd be less than one.
0.6.
Right, so you're aiming for Passive House standard across the board.
Well, you might as well. It's sort of it sounds a bit cocky now, but if you get it airtight, you might as well get it really airtight.
Yeah.
And then, from a business perspective, when people start getting and you know, I've been training tradespeople and builders now for several years now, I'm not quite sure, but every class is sort of 25 people in there. Awesome. So when people start building airtight on site, you need to be able to set yourself apart somehow.
Yeah.
So if people aim for 3, I aim for 1. If people aim for 1, I aim for 0.6.
Yeah, yeah.
Our average is around 0.3, 0.4, wow, thereabouts.
Awesome.
So it's just education. My young apprentices going through the system, they don't care. This is just a normal procedure for them.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so I just want to create certainty. I wanted to simplify the highest standard and create certainty and give that to people. On top of that, we're also pre-manufacturing everything in our facility and shorten construction time by bringing this out on site and achieving lockup in a few days. rather than months.
Yeah, which is huge because you're then incorporating the quality control, but also adding to the affordability, but maintaining that high level of quality at the same time. You're doing so you're mostly residential, but are you doing some commercial builds as well?
Yeah, we've done this a few smaller commercial buildings. There was the Torrens Childcare Centre in Canberra that we delivered the buildings to. That was the 14th most energy efficient building on the planet, which was very exciting to hear.
Wow.
Yeah. So I didn't know at the time, but we just sort of someone said
you just do what you saying, just well, do what you do.
It makes no difference. And then people starting to, can we somehow strip out some cost by using 90 mil studs down here in Victoria? The procedure in fabrication is the same. It makes
it makes a
very little difference in from the costing point of view, but performance, thermal performance, acoustic performance, major difference.
So most of your market is around you there in Victoria, but you've mentioned Canberra, Queensland, I think. You're covering most of the sort of southeast of Australia now?
Yeah, we've got a few projects at the moment. One is in production now, one is on the drawing board, and I think two more coming soon. Sydney, that's quite a large market there, but in these areas we're just delivering the building shell. So we're currently running through this training exercise where we get builders trained up to assemble the system.
Right.
You know, pretty straightforward.
Yeah.
It just takes a bit of effort, but that's okay.
Yeah.
Down here in Victoria, we went back to delivering the houses to completion. So the turnkey is the better option. Again, it was more a business decision more than anything because of the Victorian Building Authority has been replaced the Building Commission. So regulations on building surveyors got a lot stricter. Split contracts weren't really preferable with banks. Right. And just to keep things simple, we're just focused on delivering the whole package for people.
And people should check out your website too, because you've got some great videos on there of seeing the whole thing come together, explaining the whole system. When you do that turnkey solution, do you do the piling, the foundations as well?
Everything, yeah. But we do that all the way up to landscaping if that's required. Oh, wow. So we're as much or as little involved as the client wants us to be.
Yeah.
Some scenarios a lot of people are actually saying, look, if all the structural components are taken out of this, I can actually manage my house to completion. So then you do, we've had a few projects where we're just doing the foundations, demolition if required, new building shell goes up, roof on, cladding on, windows in, ventilation unit and services.
Yeah.
So that enables us to do the blower door test and that's a clean cut there.
Then
we can say,
and then they can come and finish the inside. Yeah.
They engage then the plaster or whichever finish that will be, and some people source the kitchen themselves.
Yeah.
So whichever, there's a million different scenarios for different people out there, I guess.
Do you ever do concrete slabs or are you all on piles?
No, I'm a carpenter, so I'm biased towards timber floor just for construction speed, and we can manufacture it, we can control it.
Yeah.
Anything that I can't control, I try to eliminate out. So the more I dig in the ground, the more risk I create for the project overall. So the sooner I get out of the ground, the sooner I am in charge and I'm in control and I know exactly when it's going to happen.
Nice.
But if a client requires a concrete slab because they want the polished concrete look to it, or we've got height issues that we're saying, look, we need to have a slab on ground, then we'll do a slab on ground. It's just built well. It's just thermally broken and insulated.
Yeah, no big deal.
No, not a biggie, really.
Lots more we could probably talk about. We might have to get you back on for another episode.
I always go on my little tantrums here.
Absolutely, absolutely fine. No, this is totally the forum for doing that. Where's the best place for people to get in touch with you and to find out what you're up to and what you've got available?
We've done a lot of work on our new website. That's carbonlight.com.au. And we've also on Instagram, on Facebook, And yep. on LinkedIn is myself, and also on Carbon Light has got his own LinkedIn page. So
cool.
any questions, we always encourage people to actually engage with the post. Send us questions as well that you want answered. We're setting up a blog on our website as well. And like, what is the, you know, the frequently asked questions, but really relevant stuff, not just 10 questions there. You ask me the questions and I tell you. You ask me what's wrong with your house and I can explain that to you.
Wow, that's a good service. And you're doing training as well. You're doing part of the Passive House tradesperson training?
Yes, that's, well, COVID now sort of thrown a bit of a spanner in the works.
Yeah,
here,
but normally.
We're doing twice a year is a Passive House tradesperson course through Box Hill.
Yeah.
At this stage, yeah.
Awesome.
And, yeah, there's always 20, 30 people in the class.
Is an awesome course, even if people aren't intending to do a full certified Passive House straight away. It's some great learning in there. I mean, it's a pretty intensive course, but it's well worth the time.
Yeah, it's jam-packed the 1 week and just trying to press the whole information into people's brain. But I've got a lot of owner builders in there and a lot of clients that are awesome. Actually wanting to build this and saying, look, if I understand the basics, I can manage or get my builder on board and get my tradespeople on board, because it's just all about taking that fear out of it. You know, there's something new. If they can explain it, done.
Nice.
The thing will be easy from there.
Well, thank you very much for your time, Vic. I really appreciate it. And I have been an admirer of your work in Carbon Light for quite a long time.
Yeah,
so it's great to have you on the show, finally.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Burkhard Hansen there from Carbon Light in Victoria, Australia. What did you think of that episode? I really love what Burkhard is doing, the way he's gone about seeing what has been going on in Australia, what's still going on. He described it right at the start of that conversation about being the Wild West, and a lot of parts of the industry arguably still are like the Wild West. But I really like Burkhard's attitude of, look, you probably are going to get criticized if you do something wrong, do something not wrong. It's absolutely right what Burkhard's doing. If you do something a little bit different from the norm, different from the way we've been doing things, but that's leadership. And he's grabbed that and run with it. And the success is proof of the demand for high quality buildings, passive houses, and just the system as he's doing it. Really encourage you to check out Carbon Light and their website. They've got some beautiful pictures, but also some of the videos in the process. And I just hope that more of the industry adopts certainly the high performance characteristics of the design that Burkhard is endorsing, but also just the method of manufacturing as well. And that panelization just makes so much sense. Love to get your thoughts on this and other episodes. And if you find this interesting, useful, also love it if you could share it with others. Leave us a review over at Apple Podcasts as well. That helps people find the show. Also, a special thanks to Burkhard and the team at Carbon Light for sponsoring this episode and helping to bring this content to you. It's great to have people like that in as part of our community. Thank you very much for tuning in. I'm Matthew Cutler-Welsh. Now go make a better place to live.
And we established Carbon Light to be that leader, to be the one that swims against the stream. And my business mentor always said to me, you know, leaders don't ask for permission. They don't wait for anyone to agree with you. And if you divide opinions on this, that's not a bad thing.